Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show.
Hello, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle HR Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO and co-founder of Employee Cycle. You know me, you know us. We're an HR analytics dashboard helping you to stop using Excel and Google Sheets to pull all your data from all your disparate systems. But that's enough about us. Today, I am so excited to have this special guest who is going to talk to all of you HR leaders and everyone else who is listening about how to help your employees become lifelong learners. So please help me welcome Amy Loomis to the podcast, founder of Loomis Digital Learning and co-founder of IBM Think Academy. Woo! To the podcast, Amy!
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. And thanks to everyone who's listening.
Nice. So the question that we always like to know for each guest is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Well, that's an interesting question because in some ways I'm in HR and in some ways I straddle over to communication. My background is as a recovering academic. I started teaching communication way back at the beginning of the dot-com boom, and I got lured into tech and working with startups and consulting, and eventually wound up at IBM. The role that I was playing there was in our communication function, first in analyst relations and then in corporate communications. And that's where I founded IBM Think Academy, which is both straddling with HR and with communication and with marketing. So that's one of the things that I'll be here to talk about.
Very nice. So our topic is how to help employees become lifelong learners. So the first question that we need to define is, what is a lifelong learner?
A lifelong learner is anybody who really remains curious and wants to continue understanding how the world works, to see themselves as a rejuvenated soul and not a worker who's been beaten down by too much information.
Got it. Okay. So in regards to lifelong learners versus how most employees are today, what's the biggest difference? Because it seems as though a lot of organizations try to put in organizational development, training modules, sending people back to school with the ability for them to be able to pay for it. A lot of things that it seems like they're trying to help their employees to become lifelong learners. So why are companies not doing a good job of doing that today in regards to how you define lifelong learners?
Well, I wouldn't say they're not doing a good job, but I would say they can do better. And here's where it really comes down to the difference between role-based learning and goal-based learning. So many companies will be focused on how do they make their leaders better leaders, or their developers better developers, or their marketing people up to speed on the latest analytics that they need to do their jobs well. And in that scenario, there's a lot that can be learned, and there can be a lot of good learning that's going on for each one of those roles. But we have to stop and ask ourselves, what are the goals of those individuals? Is their goal to continue to be a developer, for example? You need to think more broadly about learning in the flow of life, not just in the flow of work. So when people are learning in service of a goal that they really have their hearts and minds behind, and that could very well be the specifics of their job today, but it also could be in service of a much larger goal that is important to them. And that's how you get them to be engaged. And I think that's how you look at work in the flow of life and the future of work, not just doing the current tasks better.
So I love how you defined role-based learning versus goal-based learning. And as I heard those two, I was thinking, are there other types of learning that have different names or categories, or are all types of learning in those two buckets? So for instance, when you look at what most people call soft skills, which that might not be the best name for it, but when you, but when you look at what's commonly known as soft skills, you think of ways of communicate, being a team player. Is that role-based? Is that goal-based? Is it its own thing? And then when you think of role-based and then goal-based, so role would be, I want to be a better engineer. Goal-based would be, maybe I want to be a top-level manager engineer. But then what about the industry-based training too? So could you give a broader theme or really help the audience understand how to categorize all these different types of learnings for any potential employee?
Sure. And that was about 12 questions in one. So I will do my best to parse them. So I think more broadly speaking, it's less about the classification, though I think that's helpful. And I'm going to tackle the first part of your question, which is really this, I think, a misnomer between hard skills and soft skills. And a number of people object to those terms because it's really human skills, and they're also gendered. And people think of all the pressure to have our learners, be they corporate workers, be they students that are graduating from college and going into the workforce, as being focused on science, technology, engineering, and math, that our increasingly digital society requires these kinds of skills. And I would argue that equally, that people need to have skills around communication, around collaboration, around critical thinking. These are skills that an artificial intelligence doesn't naturally gravitate towards or become automated easily. There are things that require, you know, ethical judgment, for example. And this is why HR is so important, and why it's so important that we think about learning in a much broader context rather than just in service of what the business needs exclusively. It clearly has to be about what the business needs, but I think we need a broader lens here on that. And to your next question about whether this is goal-based or role-based, I think those are two categories, but they're not exclusive. I think we need to think about learning in the flow of life and not just learning in the flow of work, and the role that work plays throughout our lives, rather than thinking about it just discreetly as one segment of who we are in the world. So just as a for instance, in the traditional way, and certainly that I was brought up, you went to school and you learned what it was that you wanted to learn and learned what it was you wanted to be. And then in next stage of your life, you would get into the workforce and you might go through a couple of jobs. And it might be that every 3 to 5 years or so that you would shift jobs. And then eventually you'd start to wind down your career and start thinking about retirement and then go off to, you know, a beach with a coconut somewhere. That's not the way that it works now, as we all are painfully aware. But I think it doesn't have to be painful. I think if we think of ourselves as, you know, human learners, and these are human goals, not just hard or soft skills, but human skills, and that as digital technology evolves and becomes part of our workforce and our workplace, and it's also in our homes as well. That distinction between work and home is blurring. The distinction between when you're working and when you're learning to work and working to learn, these become much, much more fluid. So I think that's an important thing. You may have listeners who are interested in this further, and Heather McGowan has done a great job of talking about the future of work and the future of learning in some of these terms. But I would say that that's the broader context, that we have far more fluid boundaries, that we need to think of our skills in more holistic ways that are about integrating our learning and our life and our work as part of a whole, rather than isolating them to segments of our life.
Very interesting. We always try to create some type of framework that the HR listener can follow in order for them to implement a lot of the practical knowledge versus just the theory. So in regards to making your employee base a group of life learners, lifelong learners, what does that look like in practice?
I would say that you have to think of it around a number of cornerstones. So One of them is clearly what are the needs of the business and what kinds of skills and philosophy of learning skills do you need to have the business work well? So in that regard, you can think of making it a reality by adopting a culture of agile development. And that's not just for developers. It's really a practice of being able to have a group of employees and their managers and their executives that endorse things like failing fast forward, endorse things like learning how to iteratively work on skills and work on projects in such a way that it's not about holding back the entire thing and then announcing it, but engaging people much more interactively using agile development, using design thinking. So that's on a business side of things, that culture, HR can play a role in establishing that culture, and also those practices, those skills and methodologies of agile development and design thinking. So that's on the business side. Then I think on the interpersonal side, which is another leg of this, to have people think about their jobs, not just in the context of what the company needs, but in the context of what they're trying to accomplish in life. And I think that fits really well with a lot of the newer employees who are looking at what the social and political and geopolitical agendas of companies are, that we all have a responsibility towards these broader ethical concerns. And that fits nicely into blending what the needs of the business are with the needs of the planet and with the needs of the person. So I think we have to look at it from that perspective as well. And then finally, the intersection of those two at a technical level, you have to have the tools in which to make these things possible. So it's necessary but insufficient to have a culture that endorses lifelong learning and endorses being able to experiment and fail fast forward. It's necessary but insufficient to be able to have the kind of tools and methodologies as part of programs to help people with their careers in a broader sense. But then you need to have actual physical platforms, be that your integration of legacy learning management systems with more up-to-date approaches to collaborating on the web via mobile technology, programs that support using this kind of tracking of employee data in a way certainly that is compliant with regulations and people's privacy concerns and compliant with their abilities, which I think is a really important element of this whole equation. So HR can play a role in endorsing and using a learning platform to bring together colleagues from marketing and from communication and from HR to collaborate on creating the kinds of tools and approaches to technology that are going to make their workforce be able to do those first two things as well.
When speaking about tools and technology and really, in a way, customizing the learning so that it's fitting the need of each employee, I almost think of it as the same way that students in a school, studies have proven that they all don't learn the same way. We all don't learn the same way. Some people like cyber learning. Some people like small classroom, large classrooms, at home schooling, etc. How do you feel that companies can help all employees learn the best ways that they learn? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's something I've thought long and hard about. And we've done a number of experimentation projects with IBMers on this in particular. So one of the projects we did was to look at which types of materials are most effectively consumed in which ways. And as you say, it's not a one size fits all, but going from the broadest brush to the most granular personalized learning. Generally speaking, when people are learning very low context, mechanical instructions and technical materials that are discrete, the digital platforms are a good choice because they offer an opportunity for people to test their skills frequently. A lot of that is memorization of new material and new vocabulary and new techniques that can be quickly tested. And the people that have an affinity for doing that can blast their way through quickly without having to sit through something that they either know already or they picked up very quickly. And the people that need, you know, remedial help, for whom that is not their preferred learning style, can go back and re-listen to things, can test themselves over again until they really have the material down. And there's an opportunity to reinforce that learning at, say, a 1 week, 3 week, 6 week intervals, so that it can get reinforced. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, if you're trying to teach materials that are strategic and theoretical and about the direction of the company as a whole in more broad terms, that are looking at new markets and new opportunities, and it's of that kind of scale and scope, then in-person is much, much better choice. So much more of the strategy and ethics and culture is absorbed when people are doing that face-to-face. It's not the kind of thing that you can say, well, what are the three principles of our strategy? You can test that, but that doesn't get people to really absorb, implement, and understand. It's much better to have context that is face-to-face for that kind of material to get really codified. And part of it is because it's creating a collaborative culture. It's creating what some people would call a community of practice. So their knowledge is not just embedded in their brain, it's embedded in the ecosystem of people that they engage with every day. And it gets reinforced very subtly across many contexts. And it's part of the fabric of the company.
That was great. That was great. Especially in the context, and I know we talked about this a little before, when it comes to things like micro learning and how that's a trend. I know you're
absolutely
have a very opinionated position on this.
Well, sure. I mean, where that's concerned, I think that you can have micro learning that operates for different purposes. So again, it's very effective to have micro learning, just like this podcast is micro learning, for specific things where it could be either preparing people to do something that's in person. It could be something that is a small bit of information that is a new process or procedure, be that on the plant floor or be that in the context of how to file an expense report, you know, that kind of thing. It can be that basic. It can also operate as a reminder for people who have been through training recently of when and how to apply what they learned. And I think another element of that that people often forget is that they have an assumption that micro learning and broader macro learning as well, but particularly micro learning, is a push function. What am I going to share with employees? And I think we have to really reimagine this much more holistically to include a pull function, to be absorbing information from employees, have them be contributing their knowledge, their insight, their questions. So I'm just putting that out there as not just when and how to use micro learning, but how to think about it more broadly.
So back to goal-based versus role-based training, in the spirit of creating this framework for HR leaders listening to understand what is it that I'm doing, how do I implement it, but most importantly, how do I get budget and buy-in for this? Do I typically have to choose one or the other first to get the organization to buy in if we aren't currently doing any type of learning?
Well, I would say it's a yes and rather than an either or. If you think these are not mutually exclusive. So in the context of, and I think we talked about this earlier, but in the context of someone, say, wanting to be promoted as part of succession planning, they need both role-based learning so they can be the best at what it is that they do, but they also need goal-based learning that sets that in the context of where they want to go. So these things can be complementary. And the way that I would recommend pitching it or promoting it for budgetary purposes is to say that the larger goal-based learning needs to be thought of in the context of the macro strategy for things like succession planning, for onboarding, for addressing issues with attrition, that kind of thing. And the role-based learning is much more point in time, making sure that the business is running smoothly because people are up to date on their skills. So the Burson research that I've read really says it's about every 2 to 3 years that people have to renew their skills. That's important to have budget for, and it opens up the aperture as to whether you want to spend that money in-house in creating content and learning experiences, or whether you want it to be a service so that everything is automatically up to date. From a budgetary standpoint, it makes more sense to be in the buy versus build mode at that point. When you're talking about having a framework for ongoing culture building and goal-based approaches that support the role-based learning, that may be more of a build versus buy decision to make.
And when it comes to budgeting, is there any framework or benchmark that HR leaders can use to determine how much they should be putting towards learning?
That's going to really depend on where in the cycle of the company's growth that they are. There's no one size fits all model here. So for example, if you're in a new market and you're in a startup mode, then there's a lot of budget that goes towards learning and development of people who are coming on board to the company, because you have to get that right. You get that one shot to get it right. And if you go to market and don't get it right, you are really putting your company at risk. Another inflection point, if you will, maybe when there is a merger with another company or an acquisition, it's really important in that instance to make the investment in learning and development so that you can both broadly for all employees, you know, redefine the culture around this acquisition, depending on how big it is. And for those that have been acquired, give them a sense of belonging to the company and get their transferable skills established, both so they can train people who were in the original company and so that they can fit better into the new lines of business where they've been acquired. So I think that's those are just two examples on different parts of the spectrum. The work that I did at IBM was around the cultural transformation of the company from a hardware, software, services business into a cloud and cognitive computing business. And that was no small task with a large global workforce that was used to being organized in a particular way, and then that shifted over time, was used to speaking about themselves and identifying in particular ways that were affiliated with the old business units. So how then do you redefine your role, and how do you establish whether you have the right skills or not moving forward to have that strategy be very implementable, rather than be a PowerPoint slide? I think that's an important consideration.
So as you're working with companies to establish their life learning and corporate development program, what are some of the main issues that you see most companies doing where they could be improving, or they're just doing poorly, or you just think that most companies have no idea what they're doing in this one specific area?
I think it's not that they don't know what they're doing. I think it's they don't know how quickly they have to move before they're going to put their competitive position at risk. So speed is a really important part of the equation here. And this is where HR, I think, is struggling, because they're used to working at a much slower pace. And then they have to figure out how to establish the right learning materials, assess which skills are going to be most competitive. Some of the problems that I hear about are, well, if we train our people, then they're just going to leave, right? We've just made it great for them to go to a competitor. I hear that. One of the most common concerns that I hear from my companies that have gone through a lot of M&A, they talk about how the lines of business have all established their own learning and development and training materials, and none of them are aligned. So they've got all these sort of discrete programs and discrete systems, and they overlap. There's redundancy, and they need to balance between, for example, culturally having each business unit have a sense of autonomy over the learning and development that they need to do and the approach, but also from a corporate perspective, how do you integrate and align these various learning programs so that you have economies of scale in terms of the platforms that they're using or the material that they're using, and do version control to ensure that they're not six different versions of some of the same materials or different approaches that don't, you know, align one another with one another. And then you get exposure when you go, you're client facing. If you walk into a meeting and the client has one version of the messaging and the person you just trained has a different version, all of that has to be coordinated. So that's the kind of concern that I hear very frequently with my clients. And then the last one that I hear often is, okay, we've implemented a new program we are happy with our teaching program. We don't know how to balance between in-person and digital. What would you recommend? And two, how do we establish ongoing, and this is to lifelong learning, but ongoing mentoring and learning relationships that go well beyond the two-day workshop or the one-hour podcast or any of that? What mechanisms do you recommend implementing? And that's where I think, you know, getting out of the comfort zone of being a single function and collaborating with the folks in marketing, the folks in internal communications, and certainly from the tops down, aligning all of that work with the strategy is so important. So that's really the pain points that I'm hearing is around those things.
And then lastly, how do you track the ROI that you're spending on corporate learning?
So that depends on, again, I think the stage at which you are, but there are a couple of ways. So previously, the ROI has been based on knowledge consumption rather than on whether it had had value to the business. So you could say, well, we have, you know, 90% executive participation in our leadership learning programs. Well, that tells me that they went. It doesn't tell me that they were able to have, you know, a change in behavior as a result of going. So some of the ROI measures that I've recommended are, for example, retention. Do employees that are engaged in the digital learning and in-person hybrid programs stay longer than those that are not engaged in them? Can you correlate? And certainly there's definite evidence of this from programs that I've run and I've seen others run. Can you correlate, for example, the progression of their career path? So people who participate in these programs are X percent more likely to be promoted within the next 2 years, that kind of thing. You could say that that's a bit of a chicken and an egg, because many times people are nominated to participate in these programs if they're considered high achieving and are oriented towards leadership from the assessments that are done on an annual basis. But measuring the speed and the progress of people's succession in their development is one ROI. Another ROI is retention, attracting people because of the programs that are there and the surveys that are done to say what drove you to join our company, including a measure to say, I understand that you're very oriented towards employee development, as an example. In terms of the programs itself, in terms of, you know, for example, when we were working with Think Academy, we would have to do ROI measures really on a weekly and then a monthly basis. And that really had to do with the degree to which people were showing not just consumption of knowledge, but application of knowledge, that they were able to take what they had learned and say, you're a sales rep. You take some of the material that you've learned and you apply it, and it's helping to close deals faster, or it's helping to orient that sales rep towards a much larger client-focused deal that maybe on a longer time frame but has higher ROI in terms of the scale and scope of the project that would have been missed if they were just micro-focused on the single line of business that they were trying to drive.
Got it. And that was all very useful and awesome information. So now we have approached my favorite part of the podcast, the lightning round, which I call the real, the random, and the ridiculous.
Okay, be careful what you ask for.
So the real question, anyone who has ever listened to this podcast knows that I always like to ask, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Oh, no, I don't. Sorry.
Well, I guess we'll just skip past that.
I'm sorry.
Guess we'll just skip past that.
I like bread. I like bread, just not bread pudding.
Got it. So the random question, what's the latest thing that you've learned, some new skill or something that you didn't know before?
That's a tough one. It's more renewing a skill that I have done before but hadn't done as much. And I've been focused on doing podcasts, webcasts, keynote speaking. I used to do a lot of that when I was an academic. It's considered part of your bread and butter. But when you're involved in doing strategy and running programs and consulting, it often goes by the wayside. So I would say I'm relearning and refining my skills at public engagement.
Nice. And then the ridiculous question, what are some of the ridiculous reasons that you've heard or seen for companies not to provide employees with some type of corporate learning program?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. They believe that it's a waste of time because the employee is going to leave anyway or leave for a competitor. They believe that because the material is going to be outdated so quickly that there's no point in looking at it in the first place. They don't recognize that learning encompasses a culture of working and not just the skills of work. Let's see, what's another one that I've heard recently? Oh, I don't understand the technology, so I'm just going to stick with what I know already. That was a recent one.
Got it. Well, thank you for offering such amazing information and dropping so much wisdom for the audience and playing the real random and ridiculous game. So I would love for the audience, which is me, to give you a huge round of applause for being on this podcast.
No. Well, thank you. And if anybody listening wants to follow up and has questions for me, I am more than open to engaging with people and taking their questions and talking through programs and problems that they may be facing.
So that was the question that I was about to ask. How can people find you online or should try to get in contact with you?
The best way to reach me is via LinkedIn. And that will send a note directly to my inbox. So, and I'm probably able to get back to them after the holidays. I'm dating the podcast, so I'll take that out, or you can take that out. But no, they can reach me through LinkedIn, and I usually get back to people within 2 to 3 days at the most, usually same day if I can.
That's perfect. Well, again, thanks again for being on the podcast. For all you listeners out there, I hope that you enjoyed this. If so, then please make sure you give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you haven't downloaded our podcast already, please make sure that it's on your favorite podcast player, wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, whatever random player you may have on your phone. And for all you HR leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.